Hello, this is Mark Felton and you're listening to the Oasis Podcast.
So, as per the intro, yes, today I'm speaking to Mark Felton, who is the harmonica player that most listeners here would probably recognise from the footage of Oasis in the mid-90s, playing at Nebworth and at Main Road and at the MTV Unplugged and at the White Room footage that we talk about in the episode. So, it's a really interesting conversation with Mark. He's a lovely guy. We cover all kinds of parts of his career. Particularly talking about the Oasis stuff, so I hope you really enjoy it. It was a really real privilege for me to speak to Mark, because I've been a big fan of his work, as we talked about in the conversation. So I hope you enjoy the episode. So over to me speaking with Mark Felton.
Mark was playing harmonica purely for pleasure. I think his name played or something. And his dad bought him harmonica to learn when he was young. I mean, it's just like saying to someone, look, we're going to start a band up in 11 years' time. Can you go and study your instrument? We'll come pick you up in 11 years' time and use you. And that's what he's done. He's been in his bedroom. He's never played in a band before. And he's just been there studying Little Walter, Charlie McCoy, Junior Wells, and all the styles. He's been playing for his own pleasure. And he actually gave it up. Until we approached him, we got his phone number from someone. And when we approached him, he said, do you want to join a band? And he was a bit taken aback. He didn't know what a microphone was, how to blow through it, because he'd been in his bedroom just playing. He didn't know what an amplifier was, you know, didn't know how to play through an amplifier. So we just shoved him straight in the deep end. And he's come out all right.
We're flying out there to do six club shows.
Yeah.
And then just to show you how different rock and roll is, I've got to do the blues set with Nine Below Zero in Sweden and finish in Stockholm Sunday. And then I'm back here to play a Bacharach film score thing for the West End Theatre. So it's completely, that's all over the place, my career.
Well, that's brilliant, though. It must be nice to get to do so many different things.
Well, it's what I've always done.
Yeah.
It is varied. It's certainly varied. You know, I couldn't do Nine Below all the time without having these lovely little bits of film score and bits and bobs, you know, interwoven into a career, as it were.
You know, going back to when, even like the start of, you know, Nine Below Zero days. I mean, that I've sort of seen it told quite a few times, even on like that famous South Bank show. But it always seems to be Dennis who tells the story. But is that true? That whole thing about he phones you up and, you know, and you literally look out the door and he's down the road.
It was absolutely true. It was very, very true. He lived at number 2. I lived at number 87, which was on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
But I'd say 70 metres away, I could look out my door and see him.
Bloody hell.
So, yeah, it was, but I had no idea who he was. I think at the time he was working as a carpet fitter with his father-in-law. He got married very young,
yeah.
Dennis, and he lost his dad very young as well. His dad died the night before we were due to play our first ever Dingwalls. His dad died really young, and it was a very upsetting time for him, and I just kind of locked myself away in my bedroom learning this odd instrument, really. Mm. But I didn't learn it the way of most British players at the time. I learned it through the American music you know, and learn country music. The country harmonica really is my love.
Yeah.
Country and blues harmonica. So I come from a very American background, and Dennis comes from a very British background, you know, for real Brit.
Yeah.
Brit blues, you know, the Field Woods and Stan Webb and all that stuff. I come from the American side. So, and it's typically typical between him and I. He's very, very opposite to me.
Yeah.
You know, we rarely socialize. We see things very, very differently, but when we're on stage together, it somehow works.
Well, I suppose it's that classic opposites attract thing. You kind of need that, I suppose.
I think so. It works very well for us anyway. You know, we differ. And then, occasionally we love the same stuff, especially at blues, you know. I'm trying to get him around into some of the Willie Nelson stuff now that I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a tough call on him. But he's a good lad, you know. We've worked together for 40 years now.
Well, that's the thing. I suppose the nice thing with you guys, though, is that you've got the opportunity to go off and do something else for years, and then you've always got Nine Below Zero to come back to.
Well, that's precisely why we've put this big band together. I mean, the four of us were stomping around Europe, and we enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, James, we really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It was time for a change, and we've never rested on our laurels.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we decided to expand. We met a bloke up the record company, and he said to us, you know, why don't you try and find some great, great, great songs that were never really heard on radio or not in the public radar, you know, just under the radar. Why don't you go and find some great B-sides?
Mm-hmm.
So we spent about 6 months researching some of the great songs that got away, you know.
Okay.
And most of that new album with the big band is trying to find these old gems, hidden gems, and we did. We found 13 of them.
Oh, brilliant.
But of course it meant using faxes and brass and all that in the studio. When it comes to live, you can't really go out there without them, you know.
Yeah.
So we took a punt on it and hired them for the best part of 9 months. And we've just finished. We finished about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The tour. So we're done now promoting that album. We'll probably get about another 6, 9 months, a year out of it. We're going to do the festivals. We're opening for Sting in a couple of months' time in Germany. So we've got some big shows to do with a big band. But now and again, like you were just saying, you know, to diversify, we're taking the classic four-piece now, the young ones, four-piece out to Sweden. So we're doing that because the promoter out there has specifically requested the original Young Ones band.
Once in every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you, you need me. Oh, my darling, won't you see the young ones? Darling, we're the young ones. We're the young ones.
Shouldn't be afraid
to live, love. There's a song to be sung. Lord, we may not be the young ones. Lord, we may not be the young ones. Lord, we may not.
That was brilliant! Shame about Cliff Richard.
What about him?
What?
What about Cliff Richard?
You're trying to be funny!
No.
Because if you are, I think it's in pretty poor taste, that's all! I'm not a fridge, you know!
So, we came to throw, and then on top of that, we got this little acoustic duo thing going, which is my great love.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
lots of little things that go in that ticking over for us if we need to call on them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So you actually call it the Young Ones Band when you've got the original four of you?
No, no, no. It was the Swedish promoter that said, you know, I'd like the Young Ones lineup. I suppose we're the old ones now.
Yeah, I was going to say, but. Yeah, I mean, just that was, I mean, that's the first time I'd heard of you guys, and I was, I'm a bit younger. I was born in 1980s. I'm coming up 37. But it was, you know, I think Young Ones was one of those things that we had a, you know, I had an older brother who had that on video and sort of watched, sneaking in and watching that. So, and all those bands that played on the Young Ones. I mean, how did that even come about? Did you know?
I'll tell you how that came about. That was a pilot show. We've done a few pilot shows in our career.
Okay.
At least six or seven of them, and six of them did nothing, never seen again, disappeared without a trace. We were on the pilot show for Jules Holland's show.
Oh, yeah.
And it was with Noel Gay Television at the time, and it was great, great audience, filmed at the Astoria in Oxford Circus, you know, Oxford Street,
mm-hmm.
Lovely theatre, disappeared, never seen again, and then, of course, later years, it got taken on by another TV company, but we did the pilot for that show. Never seen again. Now, going back to what you just said, they got these bunch of wacky comedians together, Lexi Sale, Rick Mal, and Edmondson.
Yeah.
Created this sitcom in an old, dilapidated house.
Yeah.
And I can remember getting down there. I mean, they'd written it very well. It was well rehearsed and
yeah.
well written, you know. And we went through the script with them, and they wanted us to come on and be in the living room. And of course, being a pilot show, we got the handshake at the end of the night saying, you never know, it might be taken up, it might not.
Yeah.
Us thinking, it'll never be seen again. And then 40 years on, people are saying to us, oh, I remember you from the Young Ones, been seen all over the world, in America.
Yeah.
Dennis went to America, and people were saying, hey, you're from the Young Ones, you know, you were with the Anglos, you were with the truth, and, you know.
Hey, I'm depressed. It's 9 below 0. He's blooming right, you know.
And he said it was unbelievable. And to me, looking back at that performance on the album, it's the worst thing I've ever done. And yet, the TV show in itself was a great success.
Yeah, yeah. But no, you guys were great on it. You had loads of energy, and then it sort of set the tone
because
it was the first episode.
Yeah, well, you see, I look at it and go, maybe I'm too precious about most stuff or like that. You're always self-analytical, aren't you?
Yeah.
I did never think it would go. It did go, and I went, oh, no, here we go. Like most of the stuff I did, it was pretty similar to the Oasis stuff.
Yeah.
I got called in. That gig come about, the Oasis stuff come about via my fixer. I was working when 9 Below finished. The first time round, after doing 4 albums with A&M. Anyway, I gets the call. Mark, can you get down to, I think it was working with Mark Stent.
Yeah, yeah, Mark's Bike Stent, yeah.
Wessex or somewhere like that. I think the studio's gone there. We did some work down there. I think I did the White Room with them, I think.
Yes, yeah, the White Room. Mark Radcliffe hosted that show. Yeah, that's on YouTube as well. I think you recorded Whatever before you did The White Room.
Well, you'd know better than I would, being a discographer, but I'm pretty lax about that side of my career.
Yeah.
If you go on my band website, all my discography's there.
Yeah.
And ask me what order it was all in. I have no idea.
Yeah, well,
I'm useless with times.
Well, I think...
anyway...
Because whatever would have been late 94, and then that came out as a single in 94, and I think that White Room stuff was then into 95.
Okay, Jane. Well, you've educated me. All I will tell you is that that was done then, as far as I was concerned. It was done. And then the phone went one day and said, look, they're doing some live stuff. Now, I don't know if the MTV show where they had the fight up in the gods was before the Nebworth, was it?
I think that was. Well, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think that's after Nebworth. I think.
Okay. Well, whatever I did, they asked me to do it live as well. But it wasn't only me then, because Isabel fixed the whole of the brass as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that brass section, including Steve Sidwell and the guys, all them big guys, the trumpet player was actually the one that played, would you believe, on Sergeant Pepper.
No, really? Some of that brass section?
The guy that played the lead trumpet on Sergeant Pepper was, as far as I know, the lead trumpet player on those Oasis sessions.
Wow.
Derek Watkins.
Okay.
He was part of the brass ensemble, the section that we had at times with Oasis. Now, when I did that, the Unplugged Oasis, which was from the Royal Festival Hall.
Okay.
I didn't get no guidance from Noel on that. I know that he was pretty fed up because they'd had a bit of a round, the pair of them.
Yeah, well, Liam was supposed to sing that show, and then he decided not to, and then ended up in the gods shouting abuse at Noel for the rest of the show.
Not everyone takes advantage of their Unplugged opportunity. In 1996, when Oasis did their Unplugged, lead singer Liam Gallagher blew his chance to shine and handed the spotlight to his songwriting brother Noel.
Even before we got to the day of the show, there was a concern that... what's going on with Liam?
Liam was in the paper a lot leading up to the Oasis Unplugged. He was portrayed as, you know, a bad boy.
I think we'd rehearsed for 2 weeks beforehand, and Liam, I remember, turned up once or twice.
I distinctly remember he came in a natty little green shirt, green shorts, green shoes. It was really thought out.
At some point during the song, Liam would kind of point to his throat like, I can't go on anymore, and Noel would start singing, and Liam would walk off, and the rehearsal would continue to go on.
Next day, we go back, he shows up a little later, sings a little less. Third day rehearsal, shows up, he's wearing the same clothes, he hasn't shaved, sings three songs, leaves.
We've been told he didn't want to rehearse too much because he wanted to save his voice. But you get to a point where it's like, what's up with this guy? Is he going to show up?
The day of the performance, he hadn't turned up, and there was rumors that he'd been out drinking for a couple of days, and nobody knew where he was. And about an hour before we were due to go on, he turned up absolutely shit-faced.
Good morning, what's up, why?
I said, well, look, let's see if you can sing a couple of songs, and it was just dreadful.
Saves me.
We had the whole crew there. Everybody was standing by. So the decision was, let's go ahead and tape the show, and then we'll see what happens after that.
As they said, ladies and gentlemen, Oasis. We just walked out, and he wasn't there, and he was just like, I'm not doing it. So we're like, thanks a lot. Liam ain't going to be with us tonight because he's got sore throat.
We started to do the show, Oasis minus Liam. I remember hearing someone say, Liam's in the house.
One of the camera guys pans up, and there's Liam with some champagne. Son of a bitch.
He was just drinking and just slow hand clapping.
Once he knows that the camera was on him, he sort of acknowledged the fact that, yes, I'm up here drinking beer in the balcony and not performing today.
And then proceeded to heckle his brother and the rest of the band.
Shut up. And I was like, well, thanks. Now, the least you could do is, you know, show a bit of support.
I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
There's something when the songwriter themselves sings it, maybe he's a little more connected to the song.
There was almost this kind of feeling like Noel was enjoying that moment too, where he had this opportunity to sing his own lyrics.
I think I've done a great job, to be honest with you. Afterwards, the director said, We just want to do the first song again.
Hey guys, if you hang tight, we are going to get another song in just be a couple seconds.
And of course then Liam comes on and he wants to sing after we've played for an hour and a half or something. So we just told him to piss off.
It wasn't the first time I had it. I think they had happened a couple of times, but there was still a good family bond there. However much they were out, they seemed close to me from the outside looking at you, you know.
Yeah.
And I went in and I remember Noel just giving me a kind of nod, and I just started to play with them, but none of that was rehearsed.
Really?
Absolutely.
That is crazy.
Didn't rehearse that. No, I think I did the master plan on that. I played on the master plan.
Yeah.
And I look back at it now, because my son's a collector of what I do as well, and he said, Dad, have you seen that? And I said, no. He said, it's fantastic. And it's kind of grainy old footage of it, you know, but I said, I can't remember it. And Dad said, was there any sheet music on it? No, there wasn't. He just kind of went, Mark, do what you want on it, you know. He was so fed up with what had gone down, so I just opened it up and closed it, and that was totally unrehearsed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that because, I mean, especially with them in the studio and stuff, I mean, you've been used to playing with some of these incredible musicians, whether it's like Rory Gallagher and people like that. And then to then go in with the Oasis guys who, you know, yeah, Noel's a great songwriter and Liam's a great singer, but they're not the best, you know, these are not professional musicians. They're just five chances that kind of made it. So was it noticeably different?
But what you got to remember, buddy, is that when I went in to do my parts on everything I ever recorded, it was rarely with the band.
Okay.
It was always as an overdub on mix stage. So when the tracks are getting mixed down, they normally say bring talent in to put some talent boost or sprinkle dust on the end of it.
Yeah.
And traditionally, an harmonica player would always go on last.
Yeah.
So the band had been and gone. So I didn't meet the band.
Really?
Except for the only times I ever met the band was when we did the live shows.
Goodness.
And then it was only very sporadically. I only spoke to Liam once in the whole time that I worked with Crisis. And I'll tell you where that was. That was in a bank in Manchester. I walked into a bank in my local, and he walked in behind me and he went, oh, what, you all right? And he's trying to give me his, you know, his funny old straight on his walk, and it was it, all right, see you later. I put the thumb up and that was it, he was gone. And I never spoke to him again.
So what?
The one and only time I ever spoke to him.
So what, all the Nebworth gigs and the big gigs you did, you never sort of met them and rehearsed with them? It was just on you go.
And I'll tell you for why, it was always very much, the band was kept very, very special by
really?
Alan and the guys, you know. They were very, very, very segregated from the rest of us.
Okay.
I think the mums, the girlfriends, the wives, the lovers, whatever, were always there in the VIP enclosure for them.
Okay.
But we were like the plebs, you know, we never travelled with them, never flew with them. We went to Sweden and did Scandinavia with them, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We just turn up for rehearsals, you know. Steve Sidwell was the MD of the Brass, and that kind of hanging with the Brass guys, but even then I was not part of their scene because they were all very matey and knew each other and I knew no one.
So little harmonica players like the outcast of the naughty boy at the back.
I was totally out of my depth on that gig, totally, and everyone speaks about it.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, especially with the that Nebworth footage, because they were supposed to release that Nebworth concert as a video, as a DVD, but it wasn't a great show overall. I mean, and Liam was drunk, you know, and so, and he's sort of chatting on crap. I mean, I was there and I remember, you know, just thinking this is supposed to be the highlight, but Liam's drunk and he's just rabbiting on. And but yeah, but the one thing they did release that went to the TV stations and things, because obviously it didn't have drunk Liam on it, was the Master Plan. And you, it's almost like a duet with you and Noel. It's, you are so prominent on it. I mean, did you, do you remember seeing that after the time and thinking, bloody hell, that's, no, that's a lot of me?
I don't think I've ever seen Ned with Master Plan.
Mate, go on YouTube and watch it.
I've never seen it on Ned. No, I've seen it on the Festival Hall, not Nedworth show. I didn't even know there was one.
You are so prominent. I mean, because you're all over the intro and the outro, and as I say, it's, and what you're doing, whether it was just that, you know, off the cuff. I mean, it is, you know, it's so powerful, and it's just, you know, as I say, the intro and outro, it's just you and Noel on acoustic guitar, and then the strings come in. But it's what you're doing.
Well, I can assure you that nothing was rehearsed, and to this day, I've not seen Noel since then.
Bloody hell! So,
yeah, I've not spoke to him since that day, that very last show that we did together. We were hired and fired as quickly as a manager at football. We were there and then we were gone.
So
it was off. Every day the brass all went off to do Robbie Williams or someone. Next time I saw them brass guys, we were doing Robbie Williams, that's all right.
Yeah.
And I got called in to do the same with Robbie, playing a bit of Robbie's, because Robbie Williams often hanged out backstage.
Yeah.
With the Oasis shows. I can remember seeing him at one of the big shows in London backstage.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he shot up, and then the brass guys were asked to go and play with Robbie, and then I come in and recorded some Robbie Williams albums as well.
Yeah, and you played you played on some really big stuff with him as well, Let Me Entertain You and
Southern
Border.
Although on Let Me Entertain You, I can't even hear myself in the mix. I'm there, I'm mixed so low on it, you can't hardly hear me.
You're there somewhere.
And from that, I went in and did Gary Barlow, and I did a lot of them, but they were big bands with a lot of big sounds going on, big brass things going on, you know, and I was kind of mixed down on them. But normally, if someone wanted an harmonica around at that era, I would always get the nod.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I only realised that you were on from reading your bio was Sense by the Lightning Seeds.
Oh, that was fantastic, that was.
Well, and you know what? It's one of those songs I thought, because I've always loved that song, and when I read that, I thought, I don't remember a harmonica on that at all. And I put it on, and bloody hell, that harmonica solo is
solo
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you're in the video as well.
I'm in the video as well on that. I was ill at the time, actually. On that, I wasn't very well. I had a bit of a flare-up of colitis. I'd suffered a little bit at the time.
Oh, dear.
With too much overindulgence, as we all did in our younger days, you know. And I just felt a bit dicky that day. And, but Terry Hall actually wrote that with your man, you know, I think that song.
Yeah, and
I had a lot of time for him. He was a really talented man.
Terry.
And the other guy,
Ian Brody.
The band it was.
Ian Brody.
Very talented boy. And yeah, I did that. I love doing that stuff. Yeah. I did a lot of stuff. And do you know what? I was talking, I've got to do this, as I was saying, you've not got to do this thing on the West End when I get back. And our agent, Suzanne, said to me, you know, you need to manage yourself better. And I said, you know what, Suzanne? I was doing 3 or 4 sessions a day in the early to mid-80s. And she said, well, you know, your phone don't ring anymore like it used to. I said, you know why? I said, because all the big studios have gone.
Yeah.
People started working and writing from home.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And sampling stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, it was the death of the session man, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I've come late, mid-90s, when I joined Rory Gallagher in 94, until his death in 2005. Thank God I had a live gig, because the session worked for a lot of good players in that year, especially drummers with the drum machine coming in.
Yeah.
A lot of great drummers were forced out of work. All the big studios, you know, that one big one down at Barnes, they were closed up.
Yeah, yeah.
There was 3 or 4 down in Suffolk that I was always down doing big stuff, you know, big Japanese films and all.
Oh, wow.
All of a sudden, it didn't happen anymore because the studios had all folded.
Mm.
And that's what basically knocked the head of that sort of, you know, that session career, you know.
Mm.
I still get the nod now whenever I'm wanted, but it's certainly not like it used to be, purely because people can do these things on a laptop now, aren't
yeah.
they? Kids have got their own studios at home, and you're great. I love all that.
Yeah. No,
the era of doing four sessions a day is gone.
It's gone.
So that was good. That was good. And, you know, if there's anything big out there, I'd normally get the nod.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
no way is it as big as it used to be, James.
That's interesting. But I saw you won the best harmonica player at the British Blues Awards recently as well.
I did.
That must have been pretty good.
I mean, there's only about three of us in the country. Well, there's probably me and Paul Lambie, the only two pros, but the Blues Society is a very, very close shot. And because I work with 9 Below Zero, that can be a bit on the rocky edge,
yeah,
on the punky edge, then we're not taken seriously as a blues band. Hence, I never get the nomination.
Well,
but
I looked
with that
at that.
Last album.
Yeah, they couldn't really deny that, could they?
No, and apparently I won it quite by a large margin, you know.
Yeah.
But it's only your own fans voting for you, you know, it's a load of old.
Yeah. Well, because I looked back at that, because I saw that and I thought, oh, well, you probably win it every year. And I looked back, because you're the only, I say you're the only harmonica player I knew, but then I looked back and Paul Jones had won it a few times. I'm like, well, hold on, is he?
Yeah, well, he's the chairman.
Well, and he's also hosts the Blues Show on Radio 2, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, he's very BBC, of course. Yeah. I can vote himself the winner. But we all get on actually quite well. Myself, Paul Jones and Paul Lamb.
Yeah.
We're all good mates, really, you know. Yeah. But we're very different. We play different. We're very different animals. I suppose I've done more sessions than anybody else in this country, certainly, ever.
Yeah.
I have a longer session career than the others, but the others are probably more purist, you know, in their blues side rather than their country. I tend to diversify with pop, country and blues, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think Paul Lamb would have liked to have done the Oasis thing, whereas I took it on with Relish. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, I suppose it's that thing in the blues, isn't it? It's the purity versus the willingness to try and do something a bit different.
Well, I think, you know, if you're just stuck in that old idiom, you know, like, come on, man, you know, you're an entertainer first and foremost. Let people see what the instrument can do.
Mm.
And that's what I did with Noel. And someone said to me recently, if they ever got back together, would you be up for doing some recording? And I said, God, I'd love to, love to, because I think Noel's an extremely talented writer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and did you, before you recorded with them, had you heard much Oasis? Did that make a dent on you?
No, absolutely nothing. Didn't know nothing about. I have to be honest.
And did you?
I'm on the B-side of Wonderwall. Apparently, they recorded Wonderwall a couple of hours before I did. I went in and did the pop. Around Our Way, I think the B-side of Wonderwall was.
Yeah. It is, yeah, and that's one of my favourite songs, and that is an absolute. Once again, that is a phenomenal part that you bring to that, and I mean, what I was going to say is that what I love about the harmonica, and especially your playing, is that, you know, you go from Round Our Way, which is just this really, you know, the story of the song is kids kicking a football around in the park, and you've just got this wonderful spirit to it with the brass and with your playing. It just gives it this real joyous lift. And then you go into something like The Master Plan, which is especially the live version, which is just this plaintive, mournful, sorrowful, nostalgic kind of feel. And you think, bloody hell, that's the same instrument, you know, and yet it can do those two things.
That's where all my country music training come in, because without that, then this is where a lot of players fall down. They never study melody.
Right.
You know, and I studied melody. I mean, it started with me when my grandfather did in a merchant. He was actually an engineer, and they used to take on harmonicas for the long journey in those days, because there was no aviation.
No.
Flying around, and he used to bring me back. I've been playing since I was six.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, that
it's
is
a long
fantastic.
Time. So, you know.
And I mean,
thanks for saying that. I appreciate you digging that one out and saying that, because yeah, there is two sides to the instrument. I can be as raunchy as I want, and then playing.
Yeah.
But that only comes from learning melody and studying melody and learning how to play note for note.
Yeah.
Hole for hole, rather than just puff and blow for the sake of it.
Yeah.
It's a very easy instrument to play badly.
Yeah.
It's a difficult instrument to play.
Well, you know what? I just did a interview, which is the next one going up, which is with an American punk musician, actually, who plays saxophone as well in punk bands. And we were talking about the fact that you were coming up, and what he was saying is, yeah, that harmonica is because it's in key, anyone can make it sound okay, but to actually the technical ability to actually make it, you know, to play it to a decent level, and then to play it to then the extra step up where you can, I mean, when you do things, and I sort of, let's say that lightning sitar, I think, well, no, that's a guitar, right? But that's a guitar with overdrive and gain and an effects pedal. But it's like, no, that's your mouth. That's crazy.
That's right. Yeah. For a little old
a little bit of metal.
1954 Fender Champ.
Yeah, no, that's
one
brilliant.
One valve.
They
That's all I do, and the talk stuff was the same.
Yeah.
Little amp.
Yeah.
In the studio with Mark Harris.
The only other thing I was going to say, ask about. I mean, I'm a big mod fan. I mean, would you guys count yourselves as a mod revival band? I mean, was that at the time?
No. Dennis was the mod of the four of us.
Yeah.
I certainly wasn't. I was the disco boy.
Disco.
I've become more of a mod as I've got older, I suppose, an old mod.
Yeah.
But no, Dennis was inspired by that stuff, especially with When the Truth Come Out, you
yeah.
know, after we disbanded.
Absolutely.
But I was never a mod.
Yeah.
I was more of a John Travolta, you know, Snack Hills.
But when you joined the band, did you have to chop off all your hair then or something?
No.
Chuck the flowers away, get drain pipes.
Now, I tend to try and look sharp nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not an old hippie now. I think my head, my mind is hippie. Music is hippie.
Yeah.
But my attire is sharp. So
yeah.
I try, you know, it's a bit of everything in me.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of my study come from those old hippies and that old country. You know, I keep bringing it up. I did a radio show for Melbourne Radio down in Australia, and they were telling me, asking me about that. And it all comes from country music.
Yeah.
Everything I'm about comes from country music.
That's interesting. Yeah. And the, because I suppose you end up doing a lot more mod. You know, you end up playing on these mod shows and mod weekenders and things now, just because you end up kind of getting lumped in with those guys. You know,
well
I know Dennis does with The Truth,
James,
as well.
Do you know what? Not The Truth would.
Yeah.
I think Dennis is doing a show with The Truth this Saturday coming.
Okay.
Sorry, following Saturday. At the 100 Club, and then he's doing one with Bruce Foxton's band, you know, from the Jam.
From the Jam, yeah.
From the Jam, and then the truth can slot into those mob weekenders.
Yeah.
Nine Below Zero really, really can't.
Okay.
We've been out a couple of times with Foxton's band, with Bruce's trio, you know. Or,
yeah.
But what they call From the...
From the Gen, and, yeah.
And as much as I really like Bruce and I get on with those guys really well, it's not a good springboard for Nine Below Zero. It'll be good for the Truth.
Yeah.
Because the Truth have got the swirling Hammond organ,
yeah.
The poppy songs. The Nine Below Zero were a bit more dirty than that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
That's why. I mean, we've never really been a mod band, although the early photos would probably suggest that.
Yeah,
but we've never been a mod band to listen to. I don't think so.
Well, I definitely, you know, you can definitely see it in Dennis. You can see that he's, you know, has got that look and style, and it's a Weller thing as well. I mean, a lot of the mod revival bands that came after the Jam had that.
That's correct.
Yeah, and they were, but you know, a lot of them were kind of just carbon copies of the Jam, whereas you guys definitely had that different R&B.
You're absolutely right. We did a show with Secret Affair last year on a festival up in the north of England somewhere, and those guys were all sharp suited, all, you know, being beard bellied and getting a bit older now. But you know, I was never really a mod, to be honest.
Nice one.
I like some of the mod music from the 60s. A big Georgie Fame fan, you know. Huge Georgie Fame fan.
Well, you know what? I actually saw Georgie Fame. Georgie Fame played my hometown in Didcot last week, and he was absolutely fantastic.
My baby loves me. She gets me feeling so fine. She loves me. She makes me know that she's mine. And when she kisses, I feel the fire get hot. She never misses. She gives it all that she's got. And when she asks me if everything is okay, I got my answer. The only thing I can say, I say yeah, yeah. That's what I say yeah, yeah. We'll play a melody and turn the lights down low so the night can see. We gotta do that, we gotta do that.
Well, I know his son Tristan was in the band.
He still is. So it's the tree. It's just a trio. So it's Georgie on the old organ, and then
Georgie Fame's fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, and all the old stories, and you know, and from my, you know,
as I say, as a
kind of a historian of that whole scene.
You'd have been in your element.
I was almost in tears, and like, and you know, you're enjoying the music, but then when he's talking about playing the Flamingo Club and playing the Scene Club, and you know, and all that stuff, and for me that was the big one, and you know, because when you read up on that scene, it was, you know, that he was the only white guy that the mods would listen to. You know, they would
absolutely
get in the 60s. They'd get like the GIs over and like Eugene O. Washington and people that. Bobby Bland and people, but as a white guy, the mods they knew he had it, and they knew he still got it.
That's,
you know, he's got that. But similar to you, like,
absolutely, he's a fantastic. I've played with him a couple of times.
Have you?
Just standing in front of him was, you know, a jaw dropping. Yeah, because he's in with the Royals.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why. I think he might have married into royal blood. I'm not sure, but he was in. And we did a few shows up in the Ritz.
Oh really?
When I played with Georgie Fame's band a couple of times, just as a guest. And to be in front of him when he's leading the band is just unbelievable. He's a real talent.
Yeah.
Real showman.
No, well, I was so pleased to, you know, it's amazing. We've got a little art centre in our hometown. I live in Didcot in South Oxfordshire.
Lovely.
And and it's just amazing that, you know, we get these, because it's so handy on the train straight into Paddington, we do get decent people come along, and it's it's just so amazing to see someone like him in the flesh in that really small little venue. And you know, and the fact he plays with his sons, was he drinking? Only water on stage, I think.
I know he's had a couple of lash outs in his career.
Well, maybe that's why he travels with his sons, to keep him on edge.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm glad you saw him.
Yeah, but no. But Mark, I mean, you are coming quite close to me, actually. You're playing Cornbury.
We're on the day with Brian Adams, aren't we?
Yeah, you are. And then later on in the year, you're touring with Squeeze.
Yes.
You've got some big stuff coming up with Squeeze in October, I think.
Big shows, 28 shows around with Squeeze,
So I look forward to that.
Yeah, and I'll probably get up with Squeeze as well.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. I've talked to Glenn on the phone.
yeah,
a couple of days ago, and he was saying that we're going to sort, try and sort something out. So I don't know how that's going to go yet. But yeah, we're doing, I think we've got 28 or 29 shows with those guys.
That's brilliant. Well, well, thank you so much for spending your Friday night with me. Once I've so what I do is I chop this up, I drop in clips of different stuff. So I'll be dropping in some sort of Nine Below Zero clips, drop in some of your sort of inspirations of harmonica players as well. So is there anyone in particular that you wanted me to give a shout out to and drop in?
Tell you who you could put in if you can find the footage of Bonnie Raitt singing Runaway.
Oh yeah.
With Norton Buffalo, who was her harmonica player at the time. He worked with Steve Miller until his death. Until Norton's death, that is. Not Steve Miller, but Norton was a big inspiration. Norton Buffalo.
Great.
It was in the Steve Miller Band, but if you look on YouTube for Bonnie Raitt's Runaway live, she's in the studio doing it, and he's with the white, got the white shirt on and the hat, and he's got this big coat on, and his hands are going in his coat where he keeps changing harmonicas. He's a legend, absolute legend, and a big star. San Francisco boy.
Oh, brilliant! And anything from your back catalogue that would be worth dropping in? I mean, I was going to drop in. I found a really nice bit of footage of you and Rory on Irish TV.
Okay, well, there's one thing that I am very proud of. It's Spanish Island that we did off of the album Chilled.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure if it's available online on Spotify. I'm not sure. Chilled.
Well, I'll find it, mate. Don't worry.
Spanish Island.
I mean, that's the other thing I was just going to say about Rory is that, I've come from an Irish family, and so I've always sort of dug out, looked out for Irish musicians. And he's just one I never thought of as being Irish because he sounds so authentic. You know, he sounds so authentically it never made sense to me as an Irish artist just because he's so authentic. But
He's a lovely man. He was one of the nicest guys I've in my life.
Feel like going my old lonesome home. They had no real lover since my sweet Bernie's been gone. I feel like blowing my own mean old lonesome home. It had no lover since my sweet Bernie's been gone. Woke up this morning, I look around for my shoes. You know I had them in on.
And there's still such a big community of Oasis fans. That's the thing.
I do acoustic shows with Dennis, and after the show, I get young kids coming up. Well, I'm 60 now, but young guys that are mid late 30s, early 40s, in their early 50s, saying, "Oh man, he loved what he did with Oasis." And what were they like? What were they? I did it all the time, and I'm thinking, I didn't really do a lot with them, Why don't you talk about Nigel? Poor old Dennis is walking around with his head down, thinking, "Why did he keep talking about Oasis, these blokes?" I was at my niece's wedding, just before Christmas, went to a wedding, and one of the guys said, he was with Oasis. I was like, oh, where are we going? He said, no, I just happened to play with them a couple of times.
Oh, really?
In the back of the tour. And that's it, you know, that's followed me around since then, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it always, that's it. It always will. They'll be. I mean, they wanted to be. You know, they said they were better than the Beatles, but you know, I don't think anyone ever thought they would be. But you know, they will be.
No.
They will always be. Especially for that period in that mid-90s that you were such a big part of.
Of course.
You know, that will never be. That will never be beaten. I think. Yeah. I can't see. I mean, someone like Ed Sheeran is massive now, but but that level that they reached in that mid-90s, I don't think anyone will ever reach again. So,
not with. Yeah.
Mate, I'm going to let you go,
okay,
but thank
you. Sure. Okay, mate.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Cheers, mate.
My pleasure. Have a nice weekend.
You too, Mark. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sir. Bye-bye.